we might be used as a birthday, anniversary, family get together type of venue. You know, we all still need to survive. We all still need an outlet and somewhere to enjoy ourselves. We have to survive. There's no other choice.
If you've been hanging out with Dirty Linen for the last little while, you'll know that we have been dipping deep into this question of whether or not hospitality is broken. It's been a conversation that has resonated, I guess, unfortunately, with a lot of people. Someone that reached out to me in response to some of these chats is Paul Pitcher from Woodhouse in Bendigo. I've been to Woodhouse. It is a warm, wonderful place. You can feel the heart in the room. Paul is having some feelings, going through some stuff, and I'm really thrilled that he has joined us to share today. Paul, welcome to Dirty Linen.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me, Danny.
It's I'm really delighted to bring you into the conversation, but you know, sorry that things aren't as rosy as they might be for you at Woodhouse. Set it up for us. What's Woodhouse like? You know, what did you want it to be, and where is it today?
Oh well, I suppose when me and my wife Danielle started 12 years ago, we just wanted to succeed at the start and survive, and then as we grew, we wanted to build an institution, which I probably believe we have done. 12 years in, we're still as strong as ever. Our restaurant's still as busy as ever. Our issues are our profit margins have just dropped so low that it's really hard to survive.
So what makes it hard?
I think there's been a number of issues. I'd say obviously wages is our biggest cost, and then probably the last year and a half is just the cost of operating. Electricity, you know, our electricity's doubled. Gas, work care. All of it, the work here has tripled, which anybody would not know that I owned a business. And then just the running of the day-to-day. I could say to you that our meat, like we sell meat, you know, and I buy the best quality that we can always buy. We use O'Connor beef. But from 2019 to now, you know, I used to pay like $30 a kilo for it. Now I pay $65. And we've gone from selling that in the restaurant from 46 in 2012, I actually had a look the other day, to 68 now. So it's only really gone up $22 in 12 years, but yet my cost has doubled. So these are some of the issues that have happened, but it's just the cost of everything has gone up. And it's harder to control. So we've just got to work out what we choose and to cut. Now, from our point of view, I don't want to cut our service or our food because that's what we're known for. And once you do that, you know, our customers will look at us again and say, well, hey, you know, they've dropped or you know, the service is poor or the quality of that's not good enough. So we can't do that. We've got to find other avenues to try and save money.
Paul, I can hear it in your voice, you know, the struggle that it is where every which way you turn, you know, things have gone up. You can be creative, you can work the angles, but at a certain point it just doesn't add up into a circle. I mean, what kinds of things have you tried?
Last year we put off a couple of chefs when the wage rise come through, and we just had to work more. That's one thing. And when that wage rise come through, we had to use like the salary of, you know, one of our chefs to cover all of the costs of the wage rises. So, we've looked at napkins, you know, like we use linen napkins and we think, oh, because they doubled, you know, they went from like 32 cents to 80 cents a napkin, you know. But we didn't want to, once again, we don't want to take some of those things away. So, to be honest, we've just got to be really tight, make sure our costings are really well. Like, you know, we make sure everything in our kitchen is weighed, portioned, and calculated properly, you know. It's actually quite difficult to put a finger on the things that we need to do. And the main thing is obviously our wages, but we've probably just as tight as we can be.
I mean, Paul, you know, you put off one chef, you say you have to work harder. You know, you've been doing this for a while. You've put a lot of energy into this business. What is the personal toll that it takes on you to work those extra hours?
I think firstly, mental health is hard. You know, you've got to keep yourself strong as a chef, owner. You know, we have nearly 30 staff. You've got to keep all of them up. And, you know, like at times it can be very hard. My body, you know, I'm 52. I've been a chef for over 35 years and I love it. I still love it. You know, but, you know, I've just had cortisone in both shoulders. I've got carpal tunnel in me hand, which will have to get operated on at some stage, but for now it's not going to happen. You know, I get numb hands and whatnot at night, fingers, you know, I just work through it. Like, you know, at the end of the day, I have to do what I do. I have a lot of people that rely on me. And my wife to be able to succeed. You know, a lot of our guys have got families, and, you know, we need to be busy to support them and ourselves, but, you know, it's difficult. That's the difficult side of it. You know, Danielle, my wife, she does all our cleaning. She does our bookwork and our wages. And for the last 12 years, any holiday we're on, she does our wages every week. Doesn't matter where we are. You know, the laptop comes and away she goes, you know, she just disappears and does all the wages. So we don't ever, like, you know, being hospitality is relentless. And although we love it, you know, mentally you're just really not getting that break.
I mean, you talk about the load that you're carrying on behalf of your staff and, you know, and your wife as well. You know, you're in it together, doing it pretty tough. But, you know, you're in hospitality as well. It's also about creating an experience for customers, which, you know, because you love it so much, that is also a burden. You know, that is a lot, because I know that you care that your customers have a good time. How do you manage that extra burden of being that friendly host, that welcoming spirit when things are so tough?
Oh, you just have to. We put a smile on my face. I still really love being at work. I've got great people around me, and they all love their job. So, you know, that helps. We still have fun at work. I've got a kitchen team that, you know, they're amazing. They're amazing people. You know, we sponsor three chefs, in the kitchen. I've got a chef in there that's been with me for 12 years, Sarge, and he's part of our family, you know. So, and to our front of house, you know, like the Torin, Steve, our sommelier, like they're just amazing people. So it's great to be with them, and we do have fun at work, and we just smile and do our job, and you know, we love it. We all love it. We just got to make sure that we're surviving, you know, and we're all doing the right things to make sure that the business is successful.
you know, you mentioned that you've put up prices, I suppose, as much as you think is sustainable in the business. What role do you think customers have in this conversation? You know, do you feel like it's their job to understand the realities of your business? How much do you share with them?
I think I'm at where I can be. I don't think we can put anything else up anymore. I'm very mindful of it. I think when our customers come here, they know what they're going to pay, and people save their money to come. We know that. I don't know how to answer that really clearly. Other than to say, look, really, I'm really mindful. It's like public holidays. Like every venue has 15%. We're only 12. And that's because I'm so mindful of what people are already paying. If we open on a public holiday, we want to make sure that people come. You know, 12% on top of an expensive piece of meat is a lot. Could be an extra $20. So I think they do understand what they have to pay when they come here, but that puts more expectation on us as well. You know, we've got to meet that, and it's probably why with what I do use, the meats that I use, the O'Connor, the Sher Wagyu, the Ranges Valley, like, and even to McIver Farm, you know, that's all organic. We still use the best, but I want them to – they might pay for it, but they won't get that anywhere else. And that quality will shine through.
You know, I think a lot of people in the cities are feeling similar pressures, but I reckon it's different in the regions. You know, you mentioned some local producers like McIver Farm, which does extraordinary pork. What role do you think Woodhouse plays in Bendigo and the region? And does that give you an extra reason or extra pressure when you're facing these challenges?
I think that we are very important for the region. There's a few restaurants in Bendigo. There's a lot of pubs. Bendigo has great tourism, which is the Bendigo Art Gallery, which draws people in, and you know they need somewhere regionally to eat. You know Bendigo tourism are really big on trying to support and bring people to Bendigo, as well as the gallery. We've had some amazing things at the gallery. Right now, there's the Impressions of Paris. So we're all of us, the cafes, the restaurants, are all trying to do. You know, we do a special Ooh La La lunch menu, which is all French inspired. So I think for the Woodhouse, we've really made sure we've marketed our business really well through Instagram, Facebook. We get professional photos taken at least 3 times a year. That's probably one thing that we have cut, you know. I think last year maybe we only did twice. But usually it was every menu we would do a change, we would get professional photos taken. So we're probably not doing that as much either. But that's to push out our brand and make us really well recognised. As for all our producers, like we do try to use as much as we can in our local area, and we try to use their names as well. I think that's really important. We've got George from B&B. Well, he used to own B&B Basil. He grows all our zucchini flowers. Now, even now, like they're not in season, but we're not going to not use him. Like, you know, we want to support our people as well. So he relies on us to buy 140 zucchini flowers a week, and I'm not going to stop doing that. So,
That's interesting. I think, you know, what you're saying really shows how connected you are to the region. I think it can happen in the cities, but I think when you're in a country town, it is that much more personal and more direct. And I'm sure it's the same with a lot of your customers, you know, that you probably know a lot of them, and you know that how you don't want to charge them too much because you know that, you know, their electricity's gone up as well.
Yeah, oh, without a doubt. You know, it's not just us, it's the whole economy. It's tough everywhere. I feel for everybody, you know. We just got to battle through. It'll come good. And I'll say again, you know, we've still been really busy. Our restaurant is still really busy. We're still full most nights, but it's just the cost of everything. It's been hard. It was harder last year than this year. I think for Bendigo, it's kind of a little bubble. My bank manager says that to me, you know, that he feels that Bendigo's got its own little bubble. Bits do get kept out of it. Although everybody's costs have still gone up, it's still kind of busy, but it's the costs for us that have, you know, that is making it a lot harder. Yeah.
You know, I'm interested, Paul, you're very experienced. I know you're working every single angle that you can. I mean, what advice could you share for people who are facing similar struggles in their businesses?
Well, I'd say from a chef point of view, make sure your chef's got a set of scales and a calculator. That's number one, because they can make or break you. There's more to being a chef than just cooking. You have to be more than that and better than that. I think that it's the people you have around you as well. Steve, who our sommelier, like he owned his own business. So I have Rashenda in here, who's a chef who owned her own restaurant as well. She works out the front with Torin, our manager. You know, my guys in the kitchen, they really understand cost and understand how, because I teach them that. I make sure that they all know that, you know, we don't have any waste in our kitchen. And it's probably because I'm in there. And I think the biggest thing is a business owner needs to be in their business. If they're not, it's going to struggle. Most successful people that I know in hospitality work in their business. I think the other thing is that we could do a little bit more help with the government. I mean, there's some things that they've done, like, you know, we always had apprentices. I've got one apprentice at the moment. But the government took away the apprentice incentives again. And, you know, we find that when we're advertising for apprentices and stuff, we get older apprentices. So once they hit 23, they're an adult apprentice. And I understand everything about wage. I work for people until we had this restaurant. So I believe everybody should be paid. But, you know, you're paying a first-year apprentice only $50,000 because they're an adult apprentice. Well, we had incentives, which was in COVID, that all of that's been taken away. So even to coming to train young people, it's hard. You know, we send all our kids to school. Well, we sent all of our apprentices to trade school. A long time ago, I used to do in-house training. That's changed. Oh, I don't do that anymore. I don't believe in it. You did ask me a question, but I went another way. I'm sorry.
No, you answered it perfectly. I mean, Paul, you touched on something that government could do. I mean, if you had the ear of powers that be at any level of government, or, you know, perhaps other industries that impact your costs, I mean, what would you like to say to them? What other change would you like to see?
You know, something that would really help hospitality would be we've lost so many good professionals. Now, you know, if we needed them, there's still shortage of good people. Well, why are we charging them or taxing them double to be a casual? Like, there's so many people need extra money now, but yet if they go and be a casual and want to work one or two nights, they get taxed double, or I think it's double. Why do we have to do that? Why wouldn't that make it easier for everybody to have more staff? People not get pay as much, and that they get their money, you know. I think that'd be a good thing for us all. I'd probably say, you know, we all need apprentices. We want to be bringing people into our industry, and I think the incentives to have apprentices is so important. You know, there's so many young people, they just don't know what they want to do. I've got two boys, you know, they don't know what they want to do. And that might be a bit older, but the costs for us as a business is so high. You're paying them nearly the same as a chef once they hit 23. So I still believe that would be something that would help a lot of businesses.
Yeah, it's a really, really good point. Paul, what are the great things about what you do? Like, what really lights you up about your business?
Oh, okay. Well, I'd say our customers first. Like, I service last night, and we had, you know, probably four different couples come up to the front pass and thank us, and, you know, say how much of a great night they had, and it was the best steak they'd ever eaten, and, you know, I love that, you know. And I know the guys in the kitchen love it, and, you know, the front of house staff, you know, one of them walked to Steve last night and said, "Oh, Steve, you just give us the most amazing experience. Thanks so much." You know, and he loves it. I really, really love that. And to be honest, I like the happiness of our staff. You know, once upon a time, you know, I've been doing this for 12 years as our own business, and, you know, when you first go through, I worked a lot more then, and I worked, like, you know, in the kitchen six nights a week. We're open, and you're probably a bit more grumpier and angrier and whatnot, and as you go along, you tend to tame down and learn what's right. And I just like my guys in the kitchen, they sing along. I just smile to myself. So I just kind of, like, love the people that I work with, our customers, and I love good food. We don't get to eat out much, Danielle and I. We don't, you know, when we have our time, we might head to Melbourne and stay overnight and go out for dinner down there. We love that. You know, that doesn't happen very often, though. We were recently down there, but and we had the best night, because it's just us and it's our time. We don't get a lot of that, so yeah. But I love our restaurant. I love what we do. I love the challenge of service, and I hope that we make everybody as happy as we can. You know, that's the goal.
I can feel, you know, how much you love it, that's clear, and also you've outlined how hard it is. I mean, some people in your position, you know, they give up, they can't find a way through. But why do you think it's important that hospitality persists, that it isn't broken, that it continues? Why are restaurants important?
Well, I think it's where people go to enjoy themselves, to break away from their day-to-day thing. You know, we might be used as a birthday, anniversary, family get-together type of venue, you know. We all still need to survive. We all still need an outlet and somewhere to enjoy ourselves. We have to survive. There's no other choice. We've just got to make the right choices and decisions, and try just do the best we can.
I know you love all your producers, and I'm sure there's not a bad piece of meat on the premises, but if I was to come up, ask you just to satisfy me with a steak, what would you put in front of me?
Ooh. Well, to be honest, I do have a couple, but and they're not all the expensive ones. I love our Sherwagyu roast beef. I just love the flavour. We use that. That's a Marble Score 9. Yeah, it's not your most tenderest steak, but it's amazing still. It has an amazing flavour, and on the wood grill, it's just beautiful. The other thing is the O'Connor Eye Fillet that we use. So we use the Marble Score 5, and it is amazing. We sell so much eye fillet, and I used to always eat Scotch fillet, or I'd eat and I'd never eat eye fillet, probably until the last year. When I take it home, and my wife and my sons would have an eye fillet. But I just think it is amazing. It is so tender, and it's got so much flavour. Obviously, our wood grill always helps that. But, they're probably my two favourites at the moment. Although I always liked Sher Wagyu's rump cap, but I can't get it off Vicky at the moment. I stopped buying it a year ago, and I've been hassling her ever since, but I can't get it. So, anyway.
Well, I don't know. It sounds like some hard decisions. I feel like one visit would not be enough. Paul, I'm so grateful to you for reaching out and for sharing with us today. I know this conversation is going to mean a lot to people. Wish you all the best in your business. And I feel like, you know, your staff are very lucky to have you at the helm, as are your customers. So, yeah, thanks so much for being part of this conversation.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me.
This is Dirty Linen, and I'm Danny Vallant. We air the issues that the hospitality industry finds hard to talk about, hearing from different people with unique perspectives. We want to hear from you as well. If you have something that needs to be said about a topic, get in touch so we can include your perspective. Contact us at dirtylinen@deepintheweeds.com.au or hit us up on Insta @dirtylinenpodcast. We can't wait to hear from you. This.